Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. So glad you're there and listening to another great show as we are now 14 days away from the big day. That's Election Day, but we got about 15 million people who have voted already. We have this huge migrant team, I guess, group coming our direction, 2,000 strong from Mexico, but not Mexicans. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West of Texas talking about that. He'll join us from Dallas. Brett Baer is standing by. We have a lot to discuss with him. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
This was entirely staged.
My fault.
Was a fake customer. Yes. He is so inept at pretending to be a real person that he really, literally cannot operate the fry machine as a normal worker.
What an idiot. This Jennifer Rubin on MSNBC going after Trump because he worked at McDonald's as a fill-in to show people he could do what Kamala Harris couldn't, and that is work at McDonald's. The media is under attack in so many ways. His 60 Minutes ineffectively answers calls to explain their edited answer to Kamala Harris's interview. Charlamagne Tha God and Lara Trump clash at the Breakfast Club, and they all collectively are losing their minds over Donald Trump's debut as a fry cook. This is Maria Shriver shuts down unscripted voters at a pretend town hall for Kamala.
Number two.
So Israel's doing a couple of things right now. They're getting inside the head of Hezbollah. They're going after the funds. That's going to make it more difficult for Hezbollah to continue funding this rocket.
Yep, that is Aaron Cohen, former Special Forces over for the IDF. Israel, first they took down Hamas, decapitated Hezbollah, and now they reveal where their wealth is hidden under a hospital so they could let the Lebanese go in and get the gold in downtown Beirut. We'll explain as the world awaits an attack on Iran. Attack back.
Number one.
The shocking fact to Democrats should be Trump is doing better at this point than he was in 2020. He's doing better at this point than he was in 2016.
That is not an easy thing for Democrats to understand, but that's why this race is so important and so intriguing. And that is Lauren Wright of Princeton. We're talking about the people that have voted already. With just 2 weeks to go until we have a new election, we finally have an election day and hopefully a winner. We're going to look at the closing arguments. And most importantly, which attack plans are actually backed by facts. And with us right now is one of the busiest guys around, certainly making impactful interviews, doing great things on the golf course, Brett Baer, special report. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So, Brett, you predicted that SNL would do something on this, on your interview. Were you happy the way you were depicted?
I don't know. I laughed out loud a couple of times. My kids definitely thought it was very cool. And I guess, you know, I have another possible alternate host sometime for Special Report.
Alec Baldwin. Who would think you'd be his comeback?
There you go.
Right. Well, we'll hear some of that a little bit later. First off, your feeling about the interview. I thought you did a great job. Was most of the feedback you got positive or negative?
It was mixed, which is fine.
Yeah.
And listen, it was what it was. We, you know, I went through it. I wish I could ask a whole bunch of other questions. I really wanted to ask this end question about, you know, if you win or if you lose, half the country will have voted for the other person, you know, a person that you say is unhinged and a threat to democracy and dangerous. And, you know, after that, no matter what happens, how do you bring the country together? I wanted to have that dismount, but I just didn't have time. But anyway, listen, it was a moment. I think she had moments in there that they were happy to have and use in their viral campaigns. And obviously I got to, you know, press on a couple of things like turning the page.
Right. What was it like before and after? I know she showed up late.
Yeah, I mean, it was we were supposed to start at 5. We had a kind of a deadline to turn the tape around at 5:18. And we told their folks that. And the vice president was in a holding room in the building, in a conference room after that event she had. And so 5:05 happened and 5:10 and 5:15. And my people were pulling their hair out. But, The vice president came in at about 5:17, and we sat down at 5:17:30, and we made the deadline at 5:18. So, yeah, it was tense for my logistical staff, definitely.
But you could have been there on time, is what you found out?
She was in the building. I don't think she was on a national security call or anything like that, but it was what it was. I was happy to have the time that we had.
Brett, we move ahead now with 2 weeks to go until Election Day. We have already 14.5 to 15 million people have voted. It looks like more Republicans are getting the message to vote early because those are the new rules. Donald Trump actually feels better about that. Now he's okay with it and sees the numbers coming in. He's going back to North Carolina a lot. Do you think that indicates that he's worried about it?
I think it might be one of the tighter ones as you look at the polls. I do think that this early voting thing is a phenomenon. If you follow John Ralston in Nevada, he's pretty shocked at the numbers that Republicans are beating Democrats in early vote in Nevada. That is really kind of astonishing at this point. And it tracks some other places like Miami-Dade County in Florida, Republicans beating Democrats. There's a couple of other indications that, early vote is really hanging tough. And traditionally, Republicans vote on Election Day, and overwhelmingly Democrats have an advantage going into Election Day. So I do think Republicans feel good with some of the stuff they're seeing. But, the old adage, it's not over till it's over, and Democrats are good at getting out the vote.
So I want you to hear what Matt Towery told Sean Hannity last night about what's happening in Georgia with early voting. Cut 16.
Let's talk about Georgia for a minute. We know that early voting is up in terms of in-person early voting, but the overall votes cast are down by 9% as to where they were at this point in 2020. That's because those absentee ballots that were mailed to everybody in the world have disappeared. And they're not there to fill the void. I think that's going to be a big plus for Donald Trump because the Democrats were great at picking up those ballots and getting them in. So that's going to make me a change, certainly, in Georgia.
So last time it was 52-27. The Dems showed up at a higher rate. Now it is a lot closer. I think there's 34% of the early voting has gone to Republicans. What about that? You forget about that, Brett, that when people just got ballots, when you couldn't go, you could have drive-in voting where you could sit there with a family of four, pull up in your Dodge Dart, and they'll all hand in your ballots together. Who knows if the dad pressured everyone to vote a certain way? And there's going to be less drop boxes. So people, I think, the secretaries of state in all these states feel the pressure to give the people a sense that this thing is on the up and up. Do you sense that?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to have some former governors in North Carolina come on our Common Ground this week, Democrat and Republican, talking about how they've made changes and how people should trust what's happening with those changes. I would note that Georgia, that new law that Kemp pushed through was designed to make things fairer in the eyes of Republicans. Democrats, you remember, called it Jim Crow 2.0, and it was racist and it was going to be horrible. More people are voting, and they're not having a problem voting. And so, all the talk about that Georgia law kind of went out the window. I do think that more Republicans feel comfortable with early voting, number one. And number two, there are more and more people that, are not doing just the absentee option.
So you guys do a town hall. We do a town hall as a network, and we actually have people stand up and ask questions. Maria Shriver had a town hall yesterday with Kamala Harris, and she made it clear you're not going to be asking questions. Listen to this, Cut 31.
You're not, unfortunately. We have some predetermined questions, and hopefully I'll be able to ask some of the questions that might be in your head. I hope so.
So I'm in the beginning of that. You missed it. It says an audience member says, are we going to be able to ask a question? And she goes, no, you're not. We have predetermined questions and ones that I have in my head. What kind of town hall is that?
Not a town hall. I mean, it just sounded horrible. Predetermined questions. And maybe we'll hit a bullseye with what you're thinking and what we predetermined she should answer. But I agree. It's we'll see how the close goes for Democrats in the last 2 weeks. I mean, there has been this kind of viral retail politics feel to the former president with the McDonald's, with the showing up at the Steelers game, with, you know, other events. And, you know, the close has been for Vice President Harris with former Congresswoman Liz Cheney, which, you know, maybe there are some Republicans, Nikki Haley Republicans, that look at that and say that's a good thing. But I think that's a pretty small universe on a close.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if something pans out with Nikki Haley this week. Brett, for people who miss SNL, who don't watch it, watch Jimmy Fallon, and then go to bed, here's a little of you were in the cold. You were being depicted in the cold open of your interview with Kamala Harris. Cut 40.
Give me the exact number of murderers you let loose in this country.
Well, Brett, I'm glad you brought up the topic of immigration.
A million, 2 million?
Okay. The first thing we did in office was to introduce a bill.
10 million? Give me a number.
Brett, we came up with a bipartisan
bill. Didn't have a number, though.
May I please finish?
I'm asking you to.
Well, then you have to listen.
Well, I can't because I'm talking.
Well, well, when will you stop?
Maybe when I go to bed.
Okay.
That's hysterical. But even though you weren't rude like that, but, I mean, that to me is relatively humorous, but she would not answer a question. If I was being honest with my comedy, I would also have fun with the fact that she never answered the question you were asking. She was answering a different question many times, which is why you said, that's not really what I asked you.
Yeah. Listen, I thought it was funny. I really did. I laughed a bunch. And, you know, I do think they left out the returning to Donald Trump 15 times in the answer, or
yeah,
or maybe, you know, turning the page from 10 years of Donald Trump running, which I thought was funny in and of itself. But yeah.
Because what you're referring to, the fact is people are exhausted. Well, you've basically been in power the whole time. Well, Donald Trump just keeps running for office. He exhausts people. She's exhausted. Biden's exhausted. Obama's exhausted. Liz Cheney's exhausted. But what we said in the cold open is absolutely true. Lauren Wright said it. Whatever you think of Donald Trump, most votes ever in 2020 for a Republican, wins in 2016, even though they never admitted it, and in 2024 is more popular than both times. I'm not saying he's going to win, but those are the facts.
Those are the facts. We'll see how this next 2 weeks goes. I think, you know, one thing to watch is some of these states that are turning, you know, the coattails may be big enough to take some of these Senate campaigns that haven't been doing great on all cylinders, like Sam Brown in Nevada, like Bernie Moreno in Ohio, like Eric Hovde in Wisconsin. You know, these races are starting to turn. And you look at not only the presidential, but the Senate map, it changes dramatically with about 2-point swing.
You know, and I also think there's some worry in Nebraska.
Yeah, I think there is. I think, you know, it went from likely to lean, but there's a lot of red in Nebraska. So if she loses, that is a big turn. Deb Fischer, that is.
Yeah. So Brett Baer, have you picked your panel?
I have not picked my panel as of yet. Going to have a conference call when I get off this call. And but I guarantee you there'll be a lot of politics in there. And listen, remember, overseas is going to factor in here. If Israel strikes Iran, you know, the fallout of that is going to be, you know, significant. I don't know how much, but it'll be significant.
You know, it's interesting. Obviously, I would play in Michigan, obviously. But in the big picture, when Harris said over the weekend, we just want this to end, it's time to get this over, that is really a fundamental problem with, I think, people's view of her in foreign policy. How this ends will decide if it starts up again. Just a ceasefire that leaves Hamas the ability to reconstitute puts off the next attack by just a few months and the next rocket by a few days. Are we going to solve the problem? Is there somebody running for president that knows how to solve the problem? And the answer might be to let Netanyahu do his thing.
It's possible. And some of the ways they've talked, I mean, if there was a full-on ceasefire before Rafah, obviously Sinwar would not be
dead
where he is. But it's a big deal. And I'm going to Michigan and Pennsylvania, taking the show on the road, talking to those Senate candidates in coming days. So it should be good.
Have you told your staff?
I have not. We're going to tell them today.
Right. Okay.
Break it to them.
Okay, good. So maybe they'll listen to the show. Hey, Brett, congratulations. Great interview. Great depiction. Good to see you. And I love what you're doing with this, with your golf foundation for veterans. That was a great feature at the end of your show last night.
Thanks. PGA Hope, PGAHope.com, if you want to check it out. It's Jack Nicklaus and really helps those veterans get back on their feet.
And they love seeing Jack and love seeing you. Brett, thanks so much.
We'll see you.
1-866-408-7669. Your chance to talk about where this race is at in your household, in your area. So tell me where it's going. And if you are still undecided, we'll put you first. And then Lieutenant Colonel Alan West about the number one issue deciding this vote, and that's illegal immigration, border control. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Good evening, I'm Brett Baer, and to clear the air, yes, I do look like someone made a businessman in Minecraft.
I don't even know. See, I don't even know anything about Minecraft, so that's why I didn't want to play that for Brett, because that was the initial. They always say in stand-up, sometimes if there's something physically outstanding about you, big nose, tall, thin, fat, you point it out. So I guess Alec Baldwin dressed like Brett. What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm not well versed in Minecraft either. But later in the cold open, they do reference also, I'm a Lego man, right? You know, sort of the Lego man looks very generic and things like that. So I assume it's just jokes like that, like, you know, handsome, you know, tall, dark and handsome news anchor, blah, blah, blah.
So here's a little on SNL over the weekend on Elon Musk. Cut 44.
At a rally in a Pennsylvania high school, Elon Musk promoted the debunked theory that Dominion voting systems rigged the 2020 election, saying, quote, the last thing I would do is trust a computer program. You know, like the ones driving all of his cars.
That's pretty interesting. Pretty funny. I would not touch. I don't touch any of that stuff. That is up for the election officials to handle. I'm not going to touch it. You're not going to hear me talking about fraud. I'm not there. I don't see it. If there's some report and a court that makes a decision, go ahead. But I really think that there is such scrutiny in big counties, small in big states, small states, big counties, small counties, high district. There is such scrutiny that I believe it's going to force the fairest election, the one we trust the most. Even though if they were to lose, only 42% of Republicans, they say if Trump loses, would agree that it wasn't cheating, that they would accept the vote. And I think only 26% of Republicans think that Joe Biden is a legitimate president. That's a pretty hard road to hoe. But you can't say he didn't get anything bipartisan done. He got gun control done. He got some people vote, Republicans vote with him on infrastructure. So that's pretty important. When we come back, the big issues, their Achilles heel, is the border. It drives Lieutenant Colonel Alan West nuts. He's a Dallas County Republican Party chair, former congressman, and 27 years he spent in the military. Back with Alan West in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Voters this week in Georgia turning out in record numbers. More than 1.3 million of them casting their ballots in person since early voting began on Tuesday.
I'd rather vote for the one that dodges bullets, not dodges questions.
I've never been a Trump fan, and I think that he's out of control.
That's a little of the give and take on what's going on in Georgia. You know, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West from Georgia. We know about the controversy in Georgia last time. And then everyone was up in arms about Jim Crow 2.0, the reforms that were put into place for 2022. It ended up being without incident. In fact, it increased turnout, especially in urban areas. And Stacey Abrams still lost again. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West with us right now. It's within the margin of error. Colonel, do you have a sense of where Georgia is heading yet?
Well, it's good to be with you, Brian. And I just got to tell you, when you go back and you look at the trends over the past two presidential election cycles, you know, going into this last month, Donald Trump was trailing Joe Biden by like 8 points and Hillary Clinton 5 to 6 points. The fact that they're saying that it is, you know, this close, Trump always underpolls. And I think that you see a lot of nervousness from the side of the left, especially Kamala Harris's operation. And why would you be bringing out Barack Obama and Michelle Obama if everything was going well? So I think that these states are going to trend towards Donald Trump.
So one thing is also clear, there's no plans to appear with Joe Biden anywhere. That's got to be humiliating for the sitting president who thought he should still have the nomination today and thinks he was so successful.
Well, without a doubt, you see some enmity between the two of them. And just recently, I think you and I talked about the deployment of the THAAD missile systems over to Israel. That put the vice president in a very, very bad position, because what do you do? Do you come out and you say that you disagree with that deployment or what? So I don't think that they're on the same sheet of music. And I think that there's a little angst between the two of them. And I would think it's more so Jill Biden than Joe Biden.
Really? You think it's more Jill?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without a doubt.
So, quick thing about this voting complexion. Black voters, it looks like Harris, according to this USA Today Suffolk poll, 72% to 17, but that only adds up to 89. So that's 11%
correct,
that has not made up their mind or said, I'm not answering.
Well, you think about this, when you're talking about 17, and I would say probably 20%, of that percentage within the black community voting for Donald Trump, that is two torpedoes in the side of the Democrat Party. And when you look at the fact that Donald Trump is actually leading in the Hispanic community right now by like 11 or 12 points, that's very damning for them. And it all comes back to this issue of the economy and also illegal immigration, the border security. That is playing huge here in Texas, and I think it's playing huge in other communities. Think about a place like Athens, Georgia, speaking of Georgia, where Lakin Riley lost her life to someone that was here illegally. All of a sudden, that has an impact in that community.
So, yeah, Whit Ayers is a Republican pollster. He estimates between 10 and 12% of the Republican Party are so-called never Trumpers. Quote, these are folks who are going, aren't going to vote for Trump. The question is whether they skip the presidential ballot or they vote for Harris. You must know Republicans that don't want to vote for Trump. What do you think they're going to choose to do?
Well, I mean, I would ask themselves, you know, what are you voting for? If you're, you know, don't like Donald Trump as a person, that's fine. But what about your principles? What about policies? What about your values? And when you look at someone like a Liz Cheney out there, you know, parading around with Kamala Harris, that's all about Liz Cheney. That's all about some hurt feelings. That's not about the country. And so I would ask these individuals, would you like to see your country sacrifice? But, you know, right now in Russia, you have the BRICS that is meeting Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and several other countries. And these countries see the weakness right now in the Biden-Harris administration. They're talking about undermining the dollar as the world currency. And you're looking at Russia and China going to a formal agreement with Iran. That would not have happened in the Trump administration. So all these people that are saying that they're never Trump, look at our foreign policy, look at our national security. If this is really what you want.
So Lara Trump, to her credit, went to the Breakfast Club with Charlemagne the God is there. Listen to this exchange. Cut 9.
That's ridiculous. I've known this man.
Wait, just pause 1 second. The question was, well, Trump's a racist. And here's her answer.
That's ridiculous. I've known this man for 16 years. And, you know, you can go to each of those incidents. And, you know, there was never any proof of anything with the houses that you're talking about.
He settled that, though.
Yeah, they settled that. And there was no admission of anything there. Donald Trump really was very beneficial to the black community when he was in the White House. I will say I've never seen this man say a racist thing. I think the attacks are fairly... Why is that funny, Charlamagne?
I'm just laughing.
You know, this is a man who, as I said in the beginning, was beloved by so many people in this country. Mm-hmm. And he was friends with everybody.
A lot of celebrities.
Jesse Jackson, by the way.
Please don't.
His Rainbow Coalition.
He had black friends. That's not going to work.
No. He let them stay rent-free in one of his buildings, the Rainbow Coalition, because he felt like at the time that was a very important thing.
And he gave him awards for what he's done for the black community, but that's when he was hosting The Apprentice. So if I put you there, Colonel, what would you have said? Mm-hmm.
Well, I would have said, let's look at Joe Biden. He was the guy that referred to Barack Obama as clean and articulate. You don't think that's racist? He was the one that, you know, when you look at the criminal justice bills that he pushed, talking about, you know, predators, black, calling black men predators. And furthermore, you know, when he looked at me and said that if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, how, you know, condescending, offensive, and racist can you be? And, of course, he eulogized a Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, and that was Robert Byrd, the senator from West Virginia. So those are the facts, and I think that we have to go on offense and not allow them to dictate a narrative.
Yeah, I mean, what he doesn't do, and I hope it's the future of politics, is he doesn't say, this is what I'm doing for blacks, this is what I'm doing for Hispanics, this is what I'm doing for women. Can we just do stuff? I mean, can you just do stuff for Americans? And I could see you going, well, what does the working class need? You know, where are they being locked out? How can I get out of their way? How can I get the middle class? You know, I could see that. But why is it black middle class and Hispanic middle class?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you look at this thing about, you know, Ms. Harris saying that she's going to legalize marijuana, I don't do marijuana. I could care less about that. We're going to give you you don't have to pay back these loans that we're going to give you. That's not what we need. You know, we want better education opportunities. What are you going to do as far as school choice? Stop relegating black kids in the inner city to failing schools. What are you going to do about the continuing the criminal justice reform, economic empowerment zones in urban communities, the low unemployment that we saw in the Trump administration. So it's about policies. And it's not about identity politics.
Yeah. So there's a migrant caravan heading up from southern Mexico. So I asked one of these Heritage Foundation experts who's actually has a division there. He says they're not Mexicans. They're legal immigrants, mostly Venezuelans who are staying in Mexico for now. But now they think there's a chance that Trump's going to win. So they're racing to the border, according to the Associated Press. Your reaction?
The last thing we need are more single military age males, especially from Venezuela, because we see what's happening with Trinidad Agua, which is a big issue right here in Dallas County. We just had a Trinidad Agua member recruiting. He was arrested for recruiting in a middle school in Houston, Harris County. We have apartment buildings that got raided down in San Antonio. So, yes, these folks sense weakness, just like the weakness on the international stage, and they're trying to take advantage of it. The border is the number one issue because it affects our safety, security, our economy. It affects our health care, education, all of these different things. And just recently, we had a woman here. I think you know the story that Trinidad Wagra, four gang members, took her into the home, beat her, threatened her, torture, and robbed her in her own home. And so that's what happens when you have a porous border.
All right. Now, lastly, Israel has done a remarkable thing in decapitating Hezbollah. Leaving everything but basically a battalion of scattered fighters in Gaza. And then we know they've been hitting Syria pretty regularly with their Islamic Jihad and others. And now they have next up, they have the Houthi rebels still out there, and you have Iran still out there, and they've been behind it. I thought it was a fascinating announcement yesterday from the defense minister. He said, hey, Lebanese, if you want money, go to the base of this hospital right in Beirut. That's where Nasrallah kept gold, up to $500 million. Why don't you go check it out? How smart is that? Not only are you bankrupting Hezbollah, but you're giving the Lebanese money for their troubles, and you're not taking it for yourself.
Yeah, you're empowering their people to rise up against the tyranny of Hassan Nasrallah and Hezbollah, which is just a client of Iran. And you're letting the Lebanese people say, you do not have to be, you know, slaves and subservient to Iran. But then we got to have someone in the White House that keeps the economic pressure on Iran, which is something this administration has not done.
Right. I'd love to see them just do it regardless and get it done. The Iran, where would you target? First off, exit question. This geospatial satellite images that shows that we were spying on Israel and the specificity is compromising possibly to their defense and to their attack plan on Iran. Number one, do you think it was a hack or a leak? And what is your greatest concern with this revelation?
Probably more so the latter than the former. And I think, once again, it's playing politics. And this is something we've got to get beyond. And hopefully that will change very soon with a new administration in January.
Yeah. All right. Colonel Allen West, he is with the Dallas County Republican Party and American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Thanks, Colonel.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian. God
bless. You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Now I will get your calls at the other end. We also haven't talked about energy. We know that Kamala Harris doesn't want to frack. We know that she has to tell everyone she's going to frack if she wants Pennsylvania or Ohio. Got it? But now we have a problem because she won't commit to additional fracking and maybe removing regulation. So is that a slow-moving ban? You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We expand that next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Which brings us to this weekend, where the absurdity outrage cycle reached its apex at a Trump campaign in Pennsylvania.
I'm going to tell them the real story of Arnold, but Arnold Palmer was all man. And I say that in all due respect to women, and I love women. But this guy, this is a guy that was all man. This man was strong and tough, and I refuse to say it, but when he took showers with the other pros, they came out of there, they said, oh, my God, that's unbelievable.
First of all, I'm not here to fact check the former president, but Arnold Palmer was an all man. He was half man, half lemonade. But the question, ladies and gentlemen, is not whether or not Arnold Palmer is being fitted for the green jacket. It's whether the media will performatively take the bait.
This was not just crude and obscene, but it was completely inappropriate. Vulgar, lewd.
This is not presidential.
Is this really the closing message you want voters to hear from Donald Trump? Stories about Arnold Palmer's penis?
Not one. Not three, but 10 minutes talking about another man's genitalia.
It's very serious. I apologize. What is the appropriate amount of time? 3 minutes, I can understand. 10 minutes, it's a you problem. But I do get there is a double standard at play. You imagine if Kamala Harris held a rally and like, Billie Jean King, her vagina, wow. She'd come out of the shower and all the other tennis players would shout, hello. Hello.
But yeah, I mean, I will actually watch. I always tape Mondays because and the whole A block. And then he went into, he's like, you guys overreacted. And I thought that's, you know, okay, that's a objective look. But then he went over to Donald Trump is threatening to kill his political opponents, Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff. That was the whole thing. And then I'm thinking, there's no way you could possibly think he's going to do it. But one thing he's legitimately saying in the Donald Trumpian way, why people pretend as if they just met Donald Trump, is that these people went out of their way to trump up an investigation that almost jailed his son and his brother-in-law. Michael Flynn cost him his career, but ended up getting him in, I mean, literally bankrupted him. He had to, I think his house went into foreclosure. If you look at the Mueller report, the Durham report, it chronicles Nancy Pelosi was part of it, pushing the Russia investigation. And the other part of it was Hillary Clinton campaign wrote a check for the dossier, Christopher Steele, to go find something about Russia. They sold this narrative nonstop to get first to get everyone's attention off her emails and then to try to destroy his presidency and get him impeached, which basically the only thing he did is get rid of Sessions for excusing himself and hiring the Mueller, Robert Mueller, to do the investigation. Special prosecutor. Cost us 2.5 years. Millions of dollars. So that's what he was referring to. I get that. The other thing he said is, look, if there's an armed insurrection, again, if we see some of the riots that happened in Minnesota with the taking of a police station, in Seattle, the Summer of Love, I'm sending in federal troops there. That's it. Because if you can't control it, I'm not letting you destroy these cities. That's the change. He also is going to do another thing right away. He's going to look into massive missile defense for the country, even if it's lasers. Which, by the way, the UK is pioneering laser missile defense, which has been 100% effective so far in laboratory tests, all right? So he's going to do that, and he's going to push the banning of sanctuary cities. I was in one on Sunday, Peekskill, New York. No one's happy about it. I'm in one today in Manhattan, New York. The mayor's not happy about it. Almost everyone except the city council's not happy about it. And then you might see in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Philadelphia, sanctuary, 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 Chicago, too. So maybe there might be a push from the people to back the president, unlike they weren't willing to do that in 2017. I think they're willing to do it now. That's reality. Look, would I have done, would I be talking about Arnold Palmer like that? No. Why were they talking about Arnold Palmer? Number one, Trump knew him well. Trump loves golf. Though so what a great guy he was. Arnold Palmer had the mix of two things. He was the first to really do sports endorsements as an athlete. He's got his Pennzoil. Like, if you have a golf club, they get that. But all of a sudden, they had Arnold Palmer, Pennzoil. Arnold Palmer on a tractor, a lawnmower, a phone. And they thought, wow, athletes can go out of their expertise and just endorse products. Would they have eventually done that? Yes. But to be the first, he was a corporation. So Trump loved the business side of him. The fact that he was a good-looking guy, number two. And number three, he was a fantastic golfer who can perform fantastic in the clutch. And then when he got retired at the end, he's like Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus loves Trump. And Arnold Palmer loves Trump. So he felt comfortable enough that in a two-hour rally to bring up something he shouldn't have, that maybe you bring up at Mar-a-Lago hanging out in the locker room with the guys. Not with Billy Bush, of course. That doesn't work out well. So the one other thing they brought up, they didn't bring up on the comedy show, Daily Show, and I understand why, is because what he did yesterday, showed up, hurricane victims. Listen to him. Cut three.
Almost 95% of the people that worked for his vice president quit. They were always quitting because she was a nut job. And on top of it all, she says she would not do one thing differently from Joe Biden, which is totally disqualifying.
That was on message. And the first thing he did is go meet with hurricane victims. And when asked by our own great reporter, Aisha Hashni, are you worried about the people here in this devastated region, my words now, most of which are voting for you, that they're not going to be able to get to the polls? You know what his answer was? It's not important voting. We got to get these people's lives straightened out first. It's a perfect answer by a great politician and somebody who's a pretty good person. That's why he did so well in the barbershop. That's why he did so well at McDonald's, complimenting the person training him, complimenting the people. These are the positives, but they don't end up on the comedy shows.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. That's the location of our studio. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks so much for listening. I guess, yeah, just 6 blocks away is where we keep our Venezuelan gangs. We were allowed to run freely and recruit others with neck tattoos. It's kind of interesting. They actually almost wear jackets and saying, I dare you to arrest me. Interesting place in New York City with a mayor that's so star-crossed. I think he might end up resigning soon. We'll see, because more indictments are going to be handing down. Also, what's happening here, Danny Penny, the Marine who stood up as a good Samaritan and suppressed Jordan Neely because he was about to attack some subway goers, finds himself fighting for his freedom today, looking at 15 years in jail. Jury selection has begun. But let's get to the big three.
Stories you need to know. It's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This was entirely staged.
My fault. There was
a fake customer. Yes. He is so inept at pretending to be a real person that he really literally cannot operate the fry machine as a normal worker.
That's Jennifer Rubin, who's just totally Trump deranged. She has a different take of the McDonald's situation over the weekend. We'll get to that. Media under attack in 60 Minutes as they ineffectively try to answer the question why they edited a crisp answer for Kamala Harris instead of a real answer in their interview. Charlemagne the God and Lara Trump spar in the Breakfast Club. And as you just heard, Donald Trump debuted as a fry cook at McDonald's. I thought it was great. You probably thought it was great. Other people thought it was staged. No, I really thought he became a shift worker while running for president. And also, this is Maria Shriver shuts down unscripted voters at a pretend town hall.
Number two.
So Israel's doing a couple of things right now. They're getting inside the head of Hezbollah. They're going after the funds. That's going to make it more difficult for Hezbollah to continue funding this rocket.
Aaron Cohen of the IDF, Israel. First, they took down Hamas. Then they decapitated Hezbollah. Now they reveal where their wealth is hidden in Beirut under a hospital. Let the people of Lebanon go in and get the gold in downtown Beirut.
Number one.
The shocking fact to Democrats should be Trump is doing better at this point than he was in 2020. He's doing better at this point than he was in 2016.
Yep. You don't want to hear it, but that's Lauren Wright, political science professor, PhD at Princeton. 14 days left and 14.5 million already voting, declaring the presidential race in both houses of Congress is too close to call. Now we look at the closing arguments in almost, and more importantly, which attack plans are actually fact-based on each other. Link, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Link Lauren, former senior advisor at RFK. Would you say influencer?
Yeah, sure. Influencer, political commentator, whatever. I'm just grateful to be here.
How did you get into that?
So I started covering politics last spring of 2023 on TikTok. I was covering Donald Trump and being fair to
him.
Just
for yourself?
Yeah, just for myself, covering it, being fair to RFK Jr. And then my video started to take off because at that point it was just a pretty much pro-DNC, pro-Biden environment. There's no one holding space for anyone on the right, anyone independent. Then the Kennedy campaign kept seeing my videos. I was doing videos saying what I thought the campaign could be doing better, what I thought they were doing well. I didn't know much about this guy. I said he's a Kennedy somehow. His name's RFK Jr. Next thing I know, I'm over at the House, and then I'm working on the campaign.
And would you say how many followers did you have when you started writing or started posting on TikTok?
When I started covering politics, maybe 30, 50,000, something like that. Now I have over 700,000.
Over 700,000. All right, so you're with RFK in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised we're not seeing more of him now, or do you think the personal stuff is weighing him down?
You know, he's got a lot going on, but he is doing these Reclaim America events. He's doing events with Tulsi Gabbard. He's hosting a town hall, I believe, with Donald Trump and other medical folks.
Oh,
he he is doing some events. I don't follow it so closely. It's kind of like going back to your high school. You know, like I don't go back and visit the teachers too often, but I see little, you know, flyers for these events online. So he's out there working, you know.
Well, are you surprised that some of the reviews about President Trump working at McDonald's? Why does it work? President actually eats McDonald's almost every day. Why does it work? Because he's trying to point out that Kamala Harris's story can't be verified, her origin story. Why do I relate to middle-class America? I worked at a McDonald's.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, we can't find any proof. She can't even name the place that she worked at. Here's a little of the exchange of Donald Trump getting the fries ready. Cut 23.
Look at the crowd over there. Look how happy everybody is. They're happy because they want hope. They need hope. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're going to give much more than hope. We're going to take hope and make it fact.
Mr. President, you actually have worked at McDonald's now.
Now I have worked at McDonald's. I've now worked for 15 minutes more than Kamala. Okay, she never worked here. I've now worked 15 minutes more than Kamala.
Was this an effective thing?
Oh, I think it was totally effective. And it's been funny watching the liberal mainstream media go totally apoplectic. They're melting down because he's having a good time. He's authentic. He actually loves McDonald's. He was having McDonald's in the White House. The man will stop at McDonald's on the way to the plane. So this is very authentic for Donald Trump. And they've been trying to manufacture this joy for Kamala Harris, manufacture this brand for her that doesn't really exist. So when they see Donald Trump having a good time at McDonald's, yeah, it resonates with people. But I also think it's hilarious that they're going, it was staged. It was a setup. No one thinks the man just strolled into McDonald's, put on an apron, and started serving up chicken McNuggets. You know, of course they shut it down. Secret Service did multiple sweeps. So I think it's hilarious. They can't really fight him because he's joyful. He's having a good time. So now they have to resort to it's staged. Everything is fake. But Kamala Harris, did she not just shut down a diner for an event and move everybody out so she could bus her own people in? Everything she does is staged.
I want you to hear what Jennifer Rubin said on MSNBC.
This was entirely staged. There was a fake customer. Yes. He is so inept at pretending to be a real person that he really literally cannot operate the fry machine as a normal worker because he would be incapable of doing so.
So, I mean, can you believe that? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, they are just so upset that Kamala Harris, she goes out there, she tries to be this joyful warrior. Let me just say the joy has left the building for Kamala Harris. At every single event, she looks miserable. I've seen people more happy going in for a colonic than Kamala Harris. She's out there with Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney also looks miserable, like she just sold her soul. They've got Barack Obama out there. He doesn't look like he's slept in years.
He seems so angry.
He seems angry. He's shaming young black men into voting for Kamala Harris, which not a great strategy with a few weeks to go. So they're very upset that the lawfare did not work against Donald Trump. He's been shot at now twice. He's had two assassination attempts. So nothing is really working. He continues chugging along, and he's smiling, having a good time doing it.
I want you to hear Kamala Harris is now getting questions about whether she worked there or not. Cut 25.
That is my president. Did you work at a McDonald's?
Interesting.
You think it's not a big deal. What's a big deal? I got to solve my... Well, the thing is, if you keep saying you're a middle-class family, they will do some investigation. She had a beautiful house over in Canada. That's where she spent most of her year. Did you see that neighborhood?
She grew up in Canada. And as someone who's – I worked in a restaurant in high school. I worked in an ice cream truck in the heat one summer.
Can you name where it is?
Yeah, I can name exactly where
there
it is.
Go.
Mojo's on the Harbor. So you can go find the restaurant. I'm still good friends with the managers. Everything I say is real. But no, Kamala Harris, she's tried to manufacture this origin story, and it's not working because she hasn't really introduced herself to the American people in years. She's been in hiding since the last 50 days. So it's just not really working out for her.
It isn't. Here's a little. We've had enough of that. But let's just talk about, if we can, where do you see the state of the election is at right now?
Even though Kamala Harris is an utter calamity, she's terrible. Even though Mr. Jazz Hands Tim Walz, her VP, is also a calamity, this is still a very tight race. We are a divided nation. The media keeps us divided. People look at Trump as a threat to democracy. He's a dictator. Well, the threat to democracy is working the drive-thru at McDonald's. So I think this is still going to be a very tight race. People are already voting in some states. So we're going to have to see what happens on November 5th. I'm done making predictions because I think it's just really close.
So here's what they have. Harris lost ground among Latino voters who now support Trump. It is now 49-38 Trump, which is stunning, which might have them have different philosophy at the border. Mm-hmm. With black voters, moderately good news for Trump. He's up to 17. She's got 72. Barack Obama had 92. But that only adds up to 89. That's 11% that either don't want to say or still haven't made up their mind yet in terms of who's the preference. Mm-hmm. It is Harris by one, which is significant because when Trump won, it was Hillary by two. When Biden won, it was Biden by four. As you know about Latino voters, double-digit voters say Harris hadn't done enough to explain the specific policies she would pursue. Only 37% said yes to that, 57% said no. And Donald Trump, has he done enough to explain his policies? 49 said yes, 48 said no. So he's about halfway there. They also have this four-year example of what he did. So there's a lot yet to... Everything you see is close.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what you have to remember is I've never really met a genuine Kamala Harris fan, right? People don't really feel like they know her. She says she wouldn't change anything about the last 4 years, but then she says she wants to turn the page and chart a new way forward. What I hear are people who think Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. He's a dictator. He's a boogeyman. The country's going to come to an end. So they would vote for a loaf of bread if it was running in the Democratic Party right now. So they're not huge fans of Kamala, but we'll see how that shakes out because people really do view Donald Trump in that way on the left.
So what people always bring up, like Charlamagne always says, January 6th, and he's a convicted felon, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. If you look at that case, convicted felon, and it's so dubious that do you notice that Kamala Harris never brings it up?
Right.
Governor Waltz never brings
it
up.
They never bring it up. I also have been disappointed, and I was texting some journalists who are traveling in Kamala Harris's press pool. I said, are any of you guys ever going to throw out a question on the tarmac or on the plane about these allegations against her husband, Doug Imhoff? For some reason, a majority of the mainstream media wants to sweep that under the rug. You know, I don't want Chris Brown to be first gentleman of the United States. Does Kamala Harris have to wear a hockey mask on date night? I mean, these allegations about her husband are pretty damning. And not once has anyone asked her about it. No one has the gall to say, Kamala, what's going on?
Joe Scarborough did ask Doug.
Okay.
And he says, basically, not directly. Has this been a big distraction?
Right.
And he did not deny. And what the story is that outside a film festival, waiting for a car, his then-girlfriend was talking to one of the valets to try to get in or get his ticket done. He thought she was flirting with him, and he slapped her. This is the allegation. Mm-hmm. Slapped her in the face so hard, she spun around, and then slapped him. Mm. All she has to say is totally not true. He has not said that. And that's what happens if, number one, it happened, and number two, you're afraid there's some video out there. You can't just blatantly deny it.
Well, also, there are the stories about how he may have impregnated the nanny and then allegedly coerced her to get an abortion. I don't know if the child is around. If you're out there, call us right now. So, no, if this were anybody else, the media would not be covering and carrying water for Kamala Harris. But they did this for 4 years for Joe Biden. They would not print or run stories about his cognitive decline because they didn't want to lose access to the White House because it's very mafia-esque. So if you say anything negative, you're not going to have access. Now no one won't ask Kamala Harris about the Doug Imhoff allegations. If this was anybody else, if this was anyone on the right or an independent candidate, they would be hounding them every single day. And Doug's out there saying he's going to uplift and support women and he's a girl dad and he loves women's rights. Well, women don't like being slapped, abused, or coerced into getting abortions.
Yeah, I mean, we just don't know anything about him. He's not running for office. That's true. But he always promised, he promises himself, you know, he's supposed to be a prominent position. The he'd be go from the second gentleman, the first gentleman.
Right.
And also when he comes to he always says he's Jewish and he's on the side of Israel. But he's not really the side of anything. I haven't really come out to him come against Hamas or condemn those Columbia protesters. That would benefit him. But you know who would hurt?
Kamala.
Yeah.
It would hurt their Democratic base. No, exactly. So I would like to hear more from Kamala Harris. You know, she really hasn't done a lot of hardball substantive interviews. And then she could barely handle sitting down for 20 minutes with Bret Baier. Kamala's going out there acting like she went through some harrowing experience. She's like, I went on Fox News. Can you believe I went on Fox News? Sweetheart, you went to sit down in a nice air-conditioned building and were asked a few simple questions about your record and what you might do as president. This isn't hardball. And she got up and stormed out of the Bret Baier interview. Her people were waving their arms to shut it down. So are we supposed to believe Kamala Harris can take on world leaders?
Link Lauren, our guest. And finally, Link, it turns out after the election, November 5th, people are going to say, okay, whoever wins, it's going to be close. And whoever wins, there's going to be a sense that, well, did Arizona count the right votes? Did Michigan count the right votes? Did Georgia screw up again? Is Florida going to go back in time? When asked, are you confident that the votes will be counted accurately? Overall, 58-41, yes. Harris supporters, 83% are confident, yes. 17% no. Trump supporters, 35%. That's fundamentally a problem. Online, what are you getting?
I mean, people are nervous about the integrity of the election. And you mentioned a state like Arizona. There was 0.3% difference between Trump and Biden in 2020. I mean, when it's close like that, you really got to watch and count the votes properly. But I believe in the electoral process. I don't want to buy trouble before it happens. I hope the election is full of integrity and it's counted properly. And we have to see what happens. You know, I want to go back to something you mentioned real quickly about the demographics. I think the biggest story on November 6th potentially could be the gender gap in this election. The men who are going for Trump, all of the women who are going for Kamala Harris. I think that's going to be a huge story Trump is gaining with young black men because he wants to uplift the economy. I think the Democratic Party has denigrated, emasculated, and vilified men for years. In fact, they think gender is a construct, many of them. So I think that'll be a huge story as well when people wake up on November 6th.
Absolutely. If your candidate loses in November, will you accept it? As we mentioned, overall, Harris, 63% yes. Trump will only accept 42%. And lastly, do you believe Joe Biden is a legitimate president? For the Harris people, 91% said yes. For Trump people, 26%.
We are a divided nation. We're very, very divided. And people are more distrustful now of the electoral process, of the mainstream media. People do not trust these systems right now.
All right. So tell me, where do people follow you?
You can find me on X at It's Link Lauren on Instagram if you Google me. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Go get him, Link.
Thank you.
Back in a moment with your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Then we're going to do a simulcast on FBN with Stuart Varney. Busy hour. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
President Biden also said that he hopes that the death of the leader of Hamas will be a path to peace in Gaza. Path to peace is also the name of the home Biden's moving into in about 3 months.
That is pretty funny. And now it's so clear that it's open season on Joe Biden. From Dana Carvey mocking him in the game show and the character every day, right?
And then even in the cold open this week, they got him pretty good. We do have some of it. It might be too long, but if you want to hear some of how they got him in the cold open. Yep.
What do you want? When asked about Joe Biden, here's what he recently said about you and your candidacy.
Okay, look, Here's the deal. It's a total tragedy. I'm not kidding around. Everything she touches will be destroyed. No joke. Watch out, Florida.
Brett is clearly talking about the hurricane. He said, watch out, Florida. Why do you keep playing these misleading clips?
I don't, but here's some more.
Folks, we have other problems on our hands. I'm being serious. Come on. 4 years ago was amazing. It was the guy who wanted. But now they got this girl. And people are going, what's she doing here? Come on.
Okay. Brett, you and I both know he's talking about the new Joker movie with Lady Gaga. Can you keep rolling it, please?
And why is she singing?
Yeah. See, I mean, number one, Brett did say, hey, I rolled the wrong clip, which happens to us sometimes. Picked the wrong clip. But they went to town on that. It's just so amazing. They never would have, if it was Biden, Trump, no way, no acknowledgement. Not the way a comedy show should be.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think she really hurt herself in this past week when in spontaneous moments were unscripted, you really get to see who is this person. When she made that remark about the rally, when somebody said Jesus is the king, and she said you're at the wrong rally, boy, does that send a terrible signal to Christians. And then she sent a terrible signal to Jews and to people who support Israel. When she said about someone who accused Israel, a protester who accused Israel of engaging in genocide, she said that this is real. This is real. Damaging, live, spontaneous moments for her. And that helps explain why the polls are shifting in the direction of Donald Trump. You can't make mistakes like that, especially when everybody's watching because they know just how scripted you are. Real moments cost you even more.
You know what also hurts is that, you know, you can attack Trump on a myriad of things, but why make stuff up? Now she's saying that he hates Social Security and will destroy it. Really? He got Republicans angry because it needs to be fixed. He says, I'm not going to touch it. I'm going to make it better. In fact, didn't he say, I'm not going to tax people receiving Social Security? I won't tax their paychecks. Previous false narratives include Project 2025. That is not something he subscribes to for the last time. Just because some ex-staffers work there at a conservative think tank, why would he, of course, subscribe to it? National abortion ban, he said it repeatedly, he's not going to do it. They keep saying he is, and encouraging Vladimir Putin to invade allies. His point was this, and it was stark. I want everyone in NATO to play their fair share. Don't expect me to protect you. Let Vladimir Putin invade you if you're not paying your fair share. That is it. But if you overstate things and talk about Charlottesville and January 6th nonstop, people get turned off. And I give you this analogy. So obviously George W. Bush was heroic on 9/11. How it happened was one thing. But since it happened, the way he acted, getting on top of that fire truck with a bullhorn. Imagine if he talked about it every day. After a while, he'd be like, okay, I get it. It would diminish the success. This diminishes and blunts out how people feel about it. January 6th, not a good day. It was not a day of love. But the rally was very supportive. That's his point. People marched over. They raided the place. If you beat up a cop, you should get punished. But if you just walk through there, you shouldn't. Who would do a better job handling threats to democracy? That's what they keep saying. Trump is a threat to democracy. Maybe this Kamala Harris is why the president, sitting president, backed off this attack line, because 43% of the country think that Trump would do a better job than Harris on protecting democracy. 40% pick Harris. I think that's significant, too. You want to hear a false attack? Listen to the vice president yesterday in Michigan, cut four.
The other issue that has come up recently has been the issue of what we are seeing, again, about Donald Trump just being, frankly, hostile to the whole notion and importance of Social Security. There are many seniors in our country that Social Security is their only form of income. Now an independent agency has reviewed Donald Trump's theory about Social Security and his policies and has indicated that his policy would actually render the Social Security fund empty, essentially, in 6 years. Again, if you look at it from minimum wage to Social Security, Donald Trump clearly does not understand the needs of working people, with Social Security being rendered insolvent in 6 years. What that would mean for the seniors of America is catastrophic.
So what are you doing about it to fix Social Security? Well, I'm not going to touch it. Seniors are going to be fine. Seniors always vote. 65 and over, one of the most certain voting blocks. You don't want to alienate them. Fine. But what are you going to do about it? You can't keep raiding it because it's mostly Americans' money. And you're not supposed to spend the private savings. George W. Bush put that up, and he was vilified for it, paid a price in 2022. So that is a narrative. They're trying to scare seniors. It would be good if it was rooted somewhere in fact. Now, the other thing they keep saying, Harris keeps saying, is that Donald Trump is exhausted. He keeps turning down interviews. Now, here's the facts. He used that term with Dan Bongino once. Bongino was doing something like a half-hour interview with him, and he had to wrap it up. So he said, Dan, I've got to, Dan Bongino wrapped it up and said, your guy said you have to go. Not because he was tired, but he had to go. So when they said that Dan Bongino said he was tired, Dan Bongino was calling outlets saying in the Harris campaign, I did the interview. He never said he was tired. However, there was one CNBC interview that Trump did not do after he said he would. And one of his staffers reportedly told an NBC producer, he's exhausted. Now, he has since denied that. The staff denied that. They said they just didn't have time to do it. But energy is not his issue. Look at this. Today, Trump participates in a roundtable with Latino leaders at 11 o'clock in Miami. J.D. Vance will deliver remarks at the campaign about a campaign event in Arizona. 7 o'clock tonight, Trump delivers remarks at a campaign trail in Greensboro, North Carolina. And he's doing an interview with us, we believe, today that we're going to air tomorrow on our show. He has a small window. He said, my only availability was 7 o'clock a.m. this morning, but I'm busy doing Fox and Friends. So they came back and they said, what about 3 o'clock? Because doing a live interview with Trump limits us because I can only do 12 minutes. And I got to go take a break. So we said, wouldn't it be great to get a post tape? This way I could take a half hour, go as long as he can before his staff hits the roof. And then maybe we get 20 minutes, maybe we get 30. But then I can handle it between two blocks and not make it seem like I'm cutting off the president, which never goes well. Not for me, not for him, not for affiliates. It looks rude. It looks arrogant. And it does make the president look good if he's talking right through the break as we go to break. But I never thought that we'd have a situation where the president was said he was too exhausted to do events. He's really just the opposite at 78 years old. And you watched him over the weekend. Today, she's off. Nothing scheduled. She's got an NBC interview and one other interview. About the state of the race, I want to look at the polls real quick. And the polls show you that it's a virtual dead heat, a 4-point lead in Arizona, a 3-point lead in Georgia, according to the Washington Post. But then you flip over to Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. It's either a dead heat or it is Kamala Harris by one. Lauren Wright weighed in. And here's what she was saying about the polls, the margins, and the popularity of Donald Trump. Almost 8 years, 5 years, 7 years after he came down the escalator, cut 12.
The polls are just so close. They're not well suited when the margins are this thin to make any kind of prediction. I mean, I don't know who's going to win on election day. Nobody really does. But the shocking fact to Democrats should be Trump is doing better at this point than he was in 2020. He's doing better at this point than he was in 2016. And what happened in 2016, we forget, is John Kasich and Ted Cruz were in there to the bitter end.
Right. And they were, a lot of them sat out the RNC. They say that there's about 12% never Trumpers now, but I would say the party is very much behind them. Yeah, there's an Adam Kinzinger, there's a Liz Cheney, there's a Mitt Romney, maybe a Karl Rove that, well, actually Karl Rove wants him to win, my personal opinion, but the others don't want him to win. You know, I don't know how many Democrats on Harris' side are vociferously against her, and it's probably not going to happen because, like Mitt Romney, she's unoffensive to people in their own party. But I also believe she's unimpressive to people in her own party. But that doesn't mean you're anti-Harris. what you have is an anti-Trump because he's so direct, he's so different, he's not a traditional conservative. So a lot of people dig in and go, you know, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want any part of this. So when Ari Fleischer weighed in too, he's a Bush guy, former press secretary. He can look at Trump like General Keane can and just say, I see the good and I see where he's going. I'll put up with some other unorthodox things. Cut 14.
I think she really hurt herself in this past week when in spontaneous moments were unscripted. You really get to see who is this person. When she made that remark about the rally, when somebody said Jesus is king and she said you're at the wrong rally, boy, does that send a terrible signal to Christians. And then she sent a terrible signal to Jews and to people who support Israel. When she said about someone who accused Israel, a protester who accused Israel of engaging in genocide, she said that this is real. This is real. Damaging, live, spontaneous moments for her. And that helps explain why the polls are shifting in the direction of Donald Trump. You can't make mistakes like that, especially when everybody's watching because they know just how scripted you are. Real moments cost you even more.
See, he's the oracle of wisdom, but I think things are different now. You could even make a big mistake a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 days ago. And just with the velocity of the news coming our direction, with everyone weighing in, with them doing subsequent interviews, I think you can shake that. I think you can. But it is significant to know that she acted like it was tough. She said, you're at the wrong rally when someone interrupted and said, Jesus is king or something. You're at the wrong rally. Well, it's kind of a weird comeback. And number two is they kicked him out. And she just waved goodbye as he was saying something about something religious. So it was a good combination, but the people in the room didn't matter because they're all Harris fans. She goes, go down to the other rally. It's smaller. I'm sorry, Madam Vice President. There's not one rally that Donald Trump does that's small.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Keep in mind, at the other end of this, I usually have some time to take some phone calls, 1-866-408-7669. We're going to do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, talk a little bit about this campaign. There's a few things going on, all involve women. We're going to talk about Doug Emhoff and his push with celebrities to push girl dads and being real men. I don't know. And then trans golfer who decides that it's not fair that the former man is playing against women and decide to drop out of the professional tour. That's where he thinks he's heading. So let's go.
Brian will miraculously appear on the screen. Exactly so. Second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, tapped Hollywood's Ben Stiller and Andy Cohen to promote girl dads voting for Harris. Brian, you got to watch this.
All the dads out there, I would say this is the time to really show your support for your daughters.
What do I love about being a girl dad? I love how much smarter she is than all the guys in the room.
My daughter's 22 and a half, is a feminist, incredibly strong, and has just inspired me in so many ways.
My vote for Kamala is an investment in my daughter's future.
And I think it's really important for the men to step up and show that they actually support us.
All right, Brian, having watched that, you being a girl dad, are you inspired to vote for Harris?
Well, that's about as inspirational as Kamala Harris's ad that told us how to be a man. That men dressed in plaid shirts sitting on the back of a pickup truck don't mind crying. It almost looked like an SNL skit. I don't know. I don't really think I needed advice from for celebrities to tell me what a real man is and how to be a girl dad. I really don't. Side note, Lee Bryce has a song coming out about girl dads, which I don't think Ben Stiller would be starring in. It's just so interesting that, you know, Doug Emhoff's daughter is telling men to step up, and it all comes back to abortion. You know, when men hang out, they're not talking about abortion. And I think if you're trying to win over men's issues, I think you might be better off in a barbershop with men trying to find out, trying to win them over. It seems to be a more natural setting than sitting in front of a big board that says girls behind it.
Yeah, right. Let's change the subject. Transgender golfer Nicole Powers is now refusing to compete against biological women. She says it's unfair because her place is not in women's sports. And former NASCAR driver Danica Patrick says that issue is one reason why she's voting for Trump. Watch this.
I am passionate because it feels like voting for Donald Trump is like the vote of reason. It's like the rational, reasonable choice. What this country could be if he gets into office with all of the amazing, brilliant people that are supporting him, I feel like it could not only be make America great again, but make America greater than it's ever been.
You're a woman who broke into a man's sport and now men's and women's sports.
A man is just different. Their hormones are different. Their body is different. So when Olympic records and things like that are getting blown out of the water, it's just wrong.
All right, Brian, bring it all together. What do you make of this?
Well, I think somebody who's both a celebrity and an athlete, just retired, obviously in a prime, already made a huge difference competing in a men's sport fairly, tried to qualify, did, got on this NASCAR circuit on pure merit. That's fine. But then you have a situation where you have a golfer do the right thing. Come out and say, you know, she came out and said, I wasn't even giving it 100%. Because I felt bad because I have physical advantages. That's all people are trying to say. You want to do what you have to do. But when it comes to the sports and females having an equal playing field to play against other females, you got to stay out. And it's simple. It's like, for example, I'd like to take steroids and win the track and field events, but steroids aren't allowed. So therefore, I can't take them. So when women have a sport, if you're not a woman, you have not born a woman, you should not be playing in that sport. And I think that Kamala Harris should be asked that. Are you okay with trans athletes playing against women? Because from Riley Gaines on down, more and more people are stepping up that blur the Democrat-Republican lines, including a lot of people in minority communities saying not okay. So someone ask her that question, please.
That would be good to have that question asked. I'm not sure what the answer would be. Brian Kilmeade, thanks for joining us. See you again real soon.
All right,
I've just got time to check the market.
So there we go. That's what's going on. And I think that's one of those minor issues that when people bring up the things of trans athletes, you're not trying to win over necessarily conservatives. You're tapping in a very traditional minority community, like, for example, Hispanics. Feel like I feel, not everybody, obviously, but the majority of which feel like I do, and maybe you do, that if you're a 12-year-old girl, you should be playing against other 12-year-old girls. And if you're a 22-year-old college athlete playing volleyball for San Jose State, if you're a trans woman, don't be surprised when UNLV and other major universities, female athletes, say, take the win. I will not compete like this. Most of all, it's not fair to women who need every opportunity possible in all division sports, and did Title IX made it possible in the 70s to compete at the highest level. Can you imagine if it's your kid, your cousin, your friend? Oh, I got cut this year, or I don't start anymore because there's two trans women playing my position. I mean, to me, that it's quite obvious. And I think that's an issue that the president brings up, and I think ads are rolling on. And that is part of the illogic of this election season. There's Republican, there's Democrat, there's conservatives, and there's liberal, and there's common sense. Of course you should seal the border. Of course you should not let people in from the FBI watch list. Of course people shouldn't be on an app applying for asylum here and just get flown in to various cities across the country. Of course women shouldn't be playing, men shouldn't be playing in women's sports. It's just so obvious what's going on in the world. Of course you back your ally when they're being attacked by seven different sides by seven different entities in Israel. But there's a lack of common sense. Quick word, too, about Michigan. The president of the United States, you know, is a big deal in UFC. Five UFC fighters showed up in Michigan yesterday to address mostly Arab audience to say go for Trump. That everybody knows that 95% of the Muslim community is here to live the American story, that the big worry for Israel and for us is the 5% that just want to destroy the West. And that's why we should be very specific in the condemnation and support.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Right from Midtown Manhattan, but heard around the country, around the world. We got a big hour coming your way. And we got Mark Penn standing by, outstanding pollster, gave great insight, Democratic strategist. Josh Krasher, Fox News political analyst and editor-in-chief of The Jewish Insider. So much going on around the country and around the world. I'll tell you, what is happening right now in Israel is just, I think, as bad as it is and as tough as it is now, it could be laying the groundwork for peace for generations. At least one can hope. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This was entirely staged.
My fault. There was
a fake customer. Yes. He is so inept at pretending to be a real person that he really, literally cannot operate the fry machine as a normal worker.
What is wrong with her? That's Jennifer Rubin of The Washington Post. Media under attack as 60 Minutes ineffectively answers calls to explain their edited answer of the Kamala Harris interview. Charlamagne the God and Lara Trump spar in The Breakfast Club. And Donald Trump has media losing their minds over his debut as a fry cook at McDonald's. This is Maria Shriver shuts down unscripted voters at a pretend town hall.
Number two.
So Israel's doing a couple of things right now. They're getting inside the head of Hezbollah. They're going after the funds. That's going to make it more difficult for Hezbollah to continue funding this rocket.
That is Aaron Conan, formerly of the IDF. Israel, first they took down Hamas. Then they are in the process of decapitating Hezbollah. Now they reveal where their wealth is hidden and told the people of Lebanon where to go get it and let the people go get the gold in downtown Beirut. Why not? We explain as the world awaits.
Number one.
The shocking fact to Democrats should be Trump is doing better at this point than he was in 2020. He's doing better at this point than he was in 2016.
That is true. Lauren Wright of Princeton, 14 days and 14.5 million voters already have voted already. Pollsters declare this presidential race is too close to call, as are both houses of Congress. We look at the closing arguments with Mark Penn, CEO and chairman of Stagwell Group, Harris Bowles. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you.
Mark, does this election remind you of anything, at least the numbers, if not the people?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
No, this is a very unique election. You've never had kind of a sitting vice president against a former incumbent president. In a country that's been divided and kind of stuck now for, you know, basically a decade in its division. No, this is a very unique election. I thought we were in kind of a Nixon-Carter-Reagan kind of cycle. And we're not in that cycle. We're in something completely new and different.
Okay, what about the numbers, how close it seems to be? Does it remind you of any other race 2 weeks to with 2 weeks ago?
Again, look, every presidential race has always been a bit of a mystery in the sense that surprise upsets happen at the end, right? And at the last minute, there's a kind of a momentum. I always explain that polls are snapshots in time, whereas you can't really see the growth of either what you consider to be the cancer or the outgrowth of the opposite, right? Because you have to kind of piece that together. You know, you look back and say, okay, is this 2006? Is it a repeat of 2016? Is it a repeat of 2020? You know, is 2024 different than those two? Yeah, the issues are different. The states are slightly different. What you're seeing shifts in, like, the minority community, I think, are different. The solidification of the working class base in the Republican Party, the movement of the Democratic Party to be more of an elite party, you know, with coastal elites. I think all of these things, you have seen these things move a little bit at a time, but they're picking up, I think, steam in terms of the direction and the way the parties are separating themselves out and the way the campaigns are so different.
So it looks like Harris lost ground with Latino voters, if you to believe the polls coming from USA Today, 49-38. That's pretty significant, being that the Democrats always thought they had the Hispanic vote.
Well, I don't really think that the Democrats have fully recognized that, first of all, the Hispanic vote is a new vote, right? And if you go back to 96, when I was running the presidential campaign, it was about 2%. Now it's 13%. So those voters don't have a history. They're more working class. They really feel the impact of inflation hard on their wages. They're somewhat more religious, you know, overall. So they have a lot of characteristics that says that no party can really count them in their pocket here, and that they're up for grabs. And you've seen, like in Florida, over the last, like, again, maybe 4 or 8 years, a dramatic shift in the Latino vote.
So what about this? What about these numbers? I mean, these aren't your polls, so I realize that. But 72-17, black voters go to Harris. But the number's lower than Democrats usually get. But there's about 11% that this only adds up to 89 is my point. So there's like 11% that are undecided or just don't want to answer.
That's not unusual.
No?
I think really too much is made of what kind of inroads is Donald Trump going to make against a black woman candidate? Probably not a lot at the end of the day. And remember, the black vote is now about the same or even maybe a little less than the Latino vote in terms of size. And so what is a, you know, 10 points difference is about 1 point in the election. There are far more voters that can be picked up in 15 points of movements in the Latino community, particularly particularly in particularly the Southwest swing states. So I think a lot is made of this, but the bigger moves here, I think Latino, but the biggest moves really about working class voters, the gender split here between a lot of women who obviously Harris's number one issue is abortion, and a lot of men who want to care more about inflation, the economy, and want a tougher foreign policy.
Yeah, I think that's true, men and women. What about the other thing that the Democrats seem to be doing, and that's going for disenfranchised Republicans? Hey, I'm going to go do a town hall with Liz Cheney, even though she said horrific things about me. Is there something there that they're seeing on the left?
I think that's a waste of time of the various things they're doing. Lynn Cheney was really disliked, right? Because, you know, people like, I mean, one of the things that Harris has going for her and is that she was a loyal vice president. So, you know, basically to kind of walk around with the Benedict Arnold of the Republican Party, which Lynn Cheney has decided to become, strikes me as to be completely useless.
So interesting, because they feel just the opposite, because they keep on rolling out these Republicans. Now, on the right, I think that Donald Trump, as you know, is going into urban settings with these barbershop groups. He's going back and forth to North Carolina, number one, showing that he cares about hurricane victims. But they got to be worried about North Carolina. Don't you agree?
Yes. I mean, look, you kind of look at places, North Carolina. I mean, there was worry about Georgia. You know, all of these states are coming in very, very close. So one state where there's a hiccup, a bad turnout, a bad vote, because so many of these states are so close, you know, every operation of every campaign across about at least 7 to 10 states has to be perfect or near perfect.
What about the attack plan that Harris seems to have found? And that is, you can't elect Trump. He's unhinged. He's too old. He's losing it. He's angry. He's exhausted. He's tired. So it went from I'm the candidate of joy to you're not going to believe how crazy my opponent is. What are they seeing, do you think?
Well, you know, I laugh every time in the media she makes a completely outlandish, over-the-top attack on Donald Trump like he's tired. I mean, oh, my God. If there's one thing, and I've spent a lot of campaigns, this guy is indefatigable. He has more energy for a guy of any age than I've ever seen. But the media will then say Harris sharpens attack, right? And then Trump will make an attack that's even milder, and it will be Trump hurls insults. And so it's almost humorous the way these campaigns are being covered now. Again, I think both campaigns would do, I always think, a little better moderating their attacks against each other because so that they don't seem over the top, right? And because I think that they're more credible with those undecided voters.
So I think
Trump has done a great job of showing he has energy, desire. Look, not that many people come through two assassination attempts. are running for president have 37 felonies against them and are there at the McDonald's, you know, dishing out the fries.
Howard Lutnick is going to run his transition. He's also working with Elon Musk to be effective out and about. I want you to hear what he said about what Elon brings to the table. Cut 19.
To be partners with Elon Musk and doing it. I mean, the guy's the coolest guy in the world, and he's going to do it with me. We're partners in it together.
That's exactly the right approach.
We are going to balance the budget. We're going to bring in the greatest people in the world, and we are going to balance the budget for Donald Trump to do it. And you know what? If he doesn't get elected, we're going to raise taxes. We don't understand the corporate tax rate. Just raise it so more goes to Ireland. Mm. Or we're going to bring the money here, bring the jobs here, bring business here, and balance the budget of the United States of America. And this is going to be the most fun you could ever have.
So he loves Musk. Musk is a wild card. He's like the Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Benjamin Franklin of this generation. Polarized because he has X. He used to be the darling of the left because of Tesla. SpaceX is an exercise what private and public can do. And he's also innovative with chips in people's brains, especially those paralyzed, not to rediscover the ability to walk or touch things. So it's amazing what this guy has been able to pull off. And he kind of intimidated Senator Fetterman, who says young people don't care that he's wealthy. They think he's Tony Stark. What's your reaction to this?
He is a real asset. He gives Trump incredible credibility that somebody who is obviously a super genius, right, who has developed not only the electric car, but the reusable rocket, is wholeheartedly and full-throatedly supports Donald Trump. And look, you know, it's a long time, you know, look, when I worked for President Clinton, the two efforts, RIGO, right, reinventing government and balancing the budget, were Democratic efforts. and they're long overdue. The budget's out of control, and government in its size is out of control. And I wish that the Democrats were pushing those efforts. But clearly the combination here that if you take a look at what Musk is ideally suited to have input is, it is in terms of making government more efficient and moving business forward into the 21st century. So I think he's an incredible asset. He has a positive image overall. I think he gives Trump real credibility. It's interesting that he's out on the political stump. Not a lot of people in his position ever would do that. I think I'd rather have him than a bunch of Hollywood stars, right? I think Hollywood stars don't really add the same kind of credibility as Musk's accomplishments really add.
So they're doing it. And Mark, this is Mark Penn, longtime pollster for Hillary and Bill Clinton. And now he's got doing his own thing. And he really, if you don't mind me saying in front of you, you really provide a balanced opinion. You don't care what people want you to say. You just see it. You call it as you see it. And when you're going to do a town hall, I think that's always a good idea. If you're Kamala Harris, I thought it was a good idea to go on with Fox. I don't know what her objective was. And also, I think it's good for her to have a press conference. She hasn't done it in 80-plus days. But then a town hall also gives you an opportunity to see what's on people's minds, especially if it's like John McCain. When you don't pre-screen people, you just find out what they want to say, and sometimes it gets combative. And then there's this. Listen to this with Maria Shriver. Someone puts up their hand and says, hey, will I be able to ask a question? Listen to this. Cut 31.
You're not, unfortunately. We have some predetermined questions, and hopefully I'll be able to ask some of the questions that might be in your head. I hope so.
Thanks. I appreciate it. What am I here? What am I, a handpicked audience? Am I an extra in a movie?
No, look, in the early days of Hillary, we did an incredible listening tour. And we just did town halls in every village and city in upstate New York, which is how she became.
I remember.
She became senator. And the idea that a town hall is so prescriptive, I mean, it's laughable, right? It's not a town hall. It's depressing sometimes. And look, you haven't hit it, but I'm also do believe that CBS has to release the transcript. They're a news organization. I don't really see if questions have been raised about the way they edited a presidential candidate's interview. It's a no-brainer to release the transcript and let people make their own judgment. It's incredible that they're not.
I mean, what we did is you had 60 Minutes come out and put a letter out. And here's a clip. They said, in a copy of the letter obtained by Fox, Trump's legal counsel, Edward Paulzik, writing on behalf of Trump, said the CBS intentionally misled the public by broadcasting a skillful, edited interview transcript aimed at causing confusion. Trump's legal counsel went on. But basically what they said is, we don't release transcripts, but we had to do, for the reasons of time, that was a more concise answer, so we moved on. That's not good enough. Do you think they'll break on this?
Well, one day. I don't know whether it will be before or after the election, but it seems to me that that there's going to be a thorough review of this, and the question is whether or not CBS is really going to make it happen now, as they really should. I mean, look, they released Trump's transcript when they did an interview, and they're in the news business. Okay, maybe they did some editing. That's fine. They should be able to defend their editing, but they shouldn't withhold the full transcript. What's the big deal? They should gotcha. Absolutely do that. But I think if they don't, I think probably uselessly after the election, it will come out and we will discover what happened.
Thank you so much, Mark Penn. You've been relentless on that. Mark Penn, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon. 14 days left. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Democratic Party had to start over. And what would you tell them about?
Well, it's like when you have to explain things to Kilmeade.
Yes.
It's like that.
So true.
So why would Dana Perino be taking a shot at me at 10 o'clock at night? Why is she taking a shot at me, Allison? She's one of the nicest people ever, one of my biggest supporters. Why would this happen?
I think, you know, Greg and his team might have had some influence on her there, right?
You mean somehow she wants to be accepted, so you run me down? Is that a form of bullying?
I mean, Dana's not a bully, though. She's so
nice.
Well,
that's how I'm taking it.
I mean, when I heard that last night, I was taken aback. I was like, even Dana's going after Brian on Gutfeld.
Right. Because we are excited because we're trying to negotiate Donald Trump interview for tomorrow. So you and I were going back late, but you kept the TV on. I put the TV off because I knew I had to go to bed.
Well, your alarm goes off a little bit earlier than mine.
Right. Mine's off at 2:25.
Mine's closer to 4:30.
4:30. Oh, how dare you sleep in? Just a quick note. Thanks to everybody who came to Peekskill, right, at the Paramount?
Great show. Congressman Lawler was there. Governor Pataki, Rick and Pat. Dawn was there. We had a blast.
Yeah. It was a great – and we had Gabby, Ricky's daughter, was there helping us out. My brother came down helping us out.
Was there.
Yeah, the Paramount dates back to 1927. They refurbished the whole thing. It's really impressive in upstate New York. I'll be at it again in Florida, though, February 15th. It seems like a long time away, but you can get tickets at BrianKilmeade.com. That's in Jacksonville at the Florida Theaters. This is twice the size we normally get. It's over 1,000 seats. Do you think we could sell it out?
Absolutely.
All right, WDBO, WOKV, help us out there.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This was entirely staged. There was a fake customer. Yes. He is so inept at pretending to be a real person that he really, literally cannot operate the fry machine as a normal worker because he would be incapable of doing so.
So if you're listening right now and never worked at McDonald's, if you can't work a fryer, I guess you're a terrible person or a bad politician. Donald Trump was getting lessons and was making fries and then worked the drive-through window. You look great. You might not like it, but it also underlines the fact that Kamala Harris can't prove she even worked there. Doesn't even know the location in which she worked. Doesn't have a, I think she says one of her friends said she mentioned she worked at McDonald's. So Trump was saying, not only do I love it, I'll learn to work there. I thought it was a good political move. The optics were great. I thought it was hysterical. While I'm doing this show yesterday, they had to show on CNN. They had to show at CNN him working the fryer and then working the drive-thru window, but they wrote underneath it, "Will not address minimum wage." Okay, thanks. Josh Krasshour joins us, political insider, writes for the Jewish Insider Radio, right here on Fox News Radio Insider. Josh, welcome back. Did you think the McDonald's optics were good, or do you agree with Jennifer Rubin of the Washington Post that they're embarrassing?
Oh, it was great politics. And you know what it reminded me of, Brian? Early on in the campaign, when a lot of people didn't think Donald Trump would emerge as the Republican nominee back in 2023, he made that trip to East Palestine, meeting with the victims, people affected by that train derailment. And the images were very similar, showing him comforting a lot of people, understanding retail politics. I think he went to a Dairy Queen right after that. Very similar. And it showed that he had sort of the ear for those forgotten voters, frankly. And look, Donald Trump understands. I mean, he has a kind of a very, very good ear for these kind of how images play in our political world. And that's what politics is all about, frankly. And so that was one of the more, I think, effective messages. Not only was he sort of trolling Kamala Harris over the dispute and controversy whether she actually worked at a McDonald's when she was in college. But that aside, he also connected both with the workers and a lot of the people who were, getting their orders and bantering with them. It was a moment. I couldn't turn away from a lot of the video. I was watching 5-10 minutes of it, on Sunday while watching football because it was so compelling. So, yeah, that shows sort of Trump's mastery of the retail political game, which, frankly, is an advantage he holds in the late stretch against Kamala Harris.
Right. I thought so. And Kamala Harris, and I just had Mark Penn on. I'll leave it to you, the expert. But Mark Penn's like, I would not be doing events with Liz Cheney. She's not popular as a Republican. And I don't know who you're winning over. I think something in their eternal said their best way to make up that 1 or 2% deficit or hold on to a lead in the battleground set they may or may not have because it's everyone's so much in doubt is to try to convert the Republicans. But I think there's a big difference between Liz Cheney and Nikki Haley, don't you?
Well, look, if you talk to the Harris campaign, they are not about policy. They're about vibes. And what they were trying to do with these events yesterday with Liz Cheney is try to appeal to moderate suburban women who may agree with Trump a little more on policy, but just don't want to vote for him personally. The problem is, like, Liz Cheney, like, when she gives up her principles, when she's not talking about foreign policy, when she's not talking about the principles that she governed on and legislated on, you're almost like, you know, it's like, what did she get out of this deal? And frankly, like, I don't think, it's going to move the needle a whole lot because anti-Trump Republicans are voting for Harris. People who can't vote for Trump under any circumstance, most of them are going to vote for Kamala Harris. And it does seem like the Harris campaign sees something where they're down by a point or two in these crucial blue wall states. And they're just trying to kind of figure out a way to both get the base back on board, black men, Hispanic working class voters, but also they're trying to make small inroads with maybe women and Republican women in particular. So Liz Cheney has become a stand-in for that group. But, you know, the Liz Cheney I covered was someone who was a outspoken voice on national security. I did not hear that much at all in Pennsylvania. I think she talked about it a little in Wisconsin. But the issues that she really was outspoken on were not front and center in those town halls. And I saw Tim Walz on The Daily Show last night saying that they're not listening to Liz Cheney on foreign policy. So, you know, I don't know how much you're actually going to move the needle when you actually are just using her for window dressing and not for actual substantive policy.
Right. So, and here is... Here is some of that exchange on The Daily Show. Cut six.
Republican introduces me in Omaha. He said, I can't stand with this guy anymore. That's not the party of Reagan. This isn't freedom, whatever it may be. It's a lot of those folks that are right. Trying to find permission to get off the mega stuff and move over. So they're still listening. They're finding a way. You know, Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney and some of those that did show some courage to cross over, they don't agree. These are folks that were told that I'm historically Republican. I'm going to vote Republican. But they don't have a home anymore. And I think for a lot of cases, they hear the noise that's out there. But that's why I'm out there talking to them.
And so how a little bit later, he'll say, but why are you bringing in the Cheneys? Because, yeah, obviously, they're vilified on the left. And they didn't care. They reveled in it. Both Liz and Dick Cheney reveled in being the Darth Vader figures. But they know that Kamala Harris, their opinions are already tweeted out. They're already in black and white. Everybody knows they don't agree with anything that she stands for. And there, it's not if for example, you go with Nikki Haley over Donald Trump, they agree on maybe 85% of things. Liz Cheney agrees with maybe 20% of what Kamala Harris would do and has done.
Well, look, at the end of that interview, like Walt said, we're not really listening to Cheney on foreign policy. I'm paraphrasing, but that was because Jon Stewart was like, why do you want to, you know, have the person who was behind the Iraq war to support you? So that's the thing that Harris, I think, misunderstands with her campaign. maybe she could make some inroads, a small inroads with Trump skeptical Republicans. But when you're saying, when you don't agree with them on policy and you're not making any concessions to get these people on board, yeah, I think you still see Kamala Harris's very progressive record and you have those same doubts. So look, I think, again, this is a vibes campaign, that the goal was to get women who may be on the fence. Liz Cheney may, they're hoping she would be a surrogate along those lines. But when you don't have substance and when you have voters that are concerned that Harris is too liberal, too progressive, and what she would do as president, I don't think those nerves have been reassured, even with those high profile endorsements.
Well, I'm sure you saw what took place over the weekend. It was all about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy and trying to from the enemy from within. Anybody who's been following what goes on, who flips channels and doesn't just stay on MSNBC, knows that Annie McCabe, that James Comey, that Peter Strzok were conspiring along with Hillary Clinton's campaign with the dossier. It was all chronicled in the Durham report to destroy his presidency. And John Kerry was talking to Iranian officials about wait it out and I'll get you back in this deal. Trump is going to get impeached. That's what he thought about with the enemy within. He saw his brother, he saw his son-in-law and son almost get jailed, and Adam Schiff was one of the chief architects of it. That's what he means by enemy within. But about the army, he was talking about civil unrest. And if you ask people in this poll who would be more of a job handling the threats to democracy, it is Trump 43, Harris 40. Josh, isn't that the reason why that whole line of attack was stopped by Joe Biden himself? Because it was not making any headway?
Well, I'm getting a lot of 2016 flashbacks with this election, both the fact that Harris is talking about Trump being a threat to democracy, that he's unstable, you know, that he's not, you know, he can't do the job. That was the Hillary Clinton argument in 2016. I'm also getting the same vibes that Harris is struggling with the base. I mean, I remember Hillary going to Detroit in the final week or two before the 2016 election, trying to get black voters excited, and they weren't. Same thing with Harris. We've seen what she's done these last couple of weeks, trying to do some last-minute outreach with people who should be voting Democrat, if history is any indication. Very, very – and then you're also seeing the blue wall. I remember, you know, the same worries about the polling in those three Midwestern and Rust Belt states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Hillary was too close for comfort and was trailing and ended up losing all three of them. And we're seeing the same alarms. So there's a new report out today that there's worry in the Harris camp about the trend lines in those very important battleground states. So I am – you know, the threat to democracy – argument, which, you know, look, I think there's a substantive case for that's an argument that Harris and a lot of folks have made. But politically speaking, just looking at public opinion, it hasn't really moved the needle. And again, it was what Hillary was arguing in 2016, and it turned out not to resonate with the voters that the Democrats needed. And I'm getting those same dynamic, very, very same type of history repeating itself in 2024.
So far, J.D. Vance, after the whole problem with single cat women and all that stuff that was on podcasts from years ago, he has really come into his own, and his approval ratings are going up. Any doubts that he could do the job? You might not vote for him, and people listening to me might not vote for him. But, man, he is very competent. I think he explains Trump better than Trump.
Yeah, well, look, that was sort of the logic from the Trump campaign in picking him as a running mate, not necessarily for the obvious political reasons, but because he would be a protege of sorts who could kind of govern and fill in and be the backup quarterback that could take the job eventually. And I think that, and look, I think he had a very good debate too against Tim Walz. I've been struck looking at the polling numbers of Vance over the last month or two, and he was underwater and not doing too great until the debate, and his numbers have improved quite notably since then. So I think people are getting to know a little more about where he stands, getting to see him out there on the campaign trail. And look, again, the winning running mate, you know, ends up becoming potentially a future president down the road. The losing running mate, you know, Tim Kaine, I think people forget he ever ran for vice president. And, you know, if you're on the ticket and you don't have the job, and you're usually forgotten. So there's a lot at stake in terms of just the results itself from this election.
So let's talk energy, if we could. The U.S. oil industry is beginning to troll Kamala Harris because no one believes that she's going to be pro-fossil fuels or had a conversion when it comes to fracking. She's never explained it. She just said President Biden's policy was for it. So Harris's climate engagement director, Camilla Thorndike, says Politico, just to be clear, Vice President Harris hasn't said anything that the administration hasn't said. She's not promoting expansion. She just said that they wouldn't ban fracking. So wait a second. So she's not going to expand fracking, which means if you're not moving forward, you're losing, because this is all about innovation. U.S. Oil and Gas Association comes back and says, so Harris's new position in October is she now opposes fracking and no longer supports her position in July, where she changed her position to support fracking, which was subsequently a change for her prior position of June, which she was opposed to fracking. Thorndike comes back and said, I didn't explain myself clearly. Contrary to Trump's claims, the VP has not banned fracking, doesn't support banning fracking, and in fact, cast that tie-breaking vote on the biggest pro-climate law ever, which, yes, opened new fracking leases. People know that's her position. By the way, that was something that Joe Manchin had to have for him to sign off on it. That wasn't an idea and an innovation. So then U.S. Oil and Gas said, wait, change of plan. As of this afternoon, Harris now supports fracking, which is a change from the position of this morning, which is what they oppose fracking, which was a charge for a change from July, which was a change from June, which was a change from a position which he opposed fracking. Do we understand ourselves? So this is trying to show oil and gas people that are worried about your job or your investment, look out.
Yeah, I look, this is sort of the where the rubber hits the road, where there are a lot of people who agree with Trump on policy, thought his presidency was more aligned with their worldview, and they have, you know, concerns on the personal stuff. But when it comes to issues like, you know, energy policy, you know, you see these climate change activists that would play an outsized role in a future, you know, Harris administration. That's where a lot of these that's where those Pennsylvania energy workers are really torn, and I think they're moving towards the Republicans if they had any doubts about this election. Ultimately, like the prevalence of people who are in the bureaucracy and in the government who would share those types of very progressive views, even if Harris is changing her tune on fracking, her administration would be stuffed with a lot of people who are more of the climate activist types, and that ultimately is a deal breaker for a whole lot of swing voters, and especially those energy producing states. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a big story, especially given the prominence and significance of Pennsylvania in this election. And Harris has not done a good job assuring on a policy basis that she's not the progressive that she was, or that she campaigned on in 2019, that she would actually be different if she's elected.
So I got to just tell you that if you want flashbacks to 2016, this just came across. Harrison Walz's campaign announces, when we vote, we win. It's a concert series with Bruce Springsteen in battleground states. That's Al Gore's plan. That was Hillary Clinton's plan. Get Bruce Springsteen to play some concerts. That's a hex. But good luck with that. Well, I know people have a good time.
Well, Brian, I was in Philadelphia the night before the election in 2016 at an Obama Clinton Bruce Springsteen concert. And I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan. I enjoyed the show that he put on. But I also was hearing in phone calls that same day before the concert from worried Democrats looking at polling in Senate races and House races that this race was not going the way Democrats were hoping for. And it looked like Trump could actually pull up at the time, which was an upset. I'm getting – again, that is very reminiscent where, you know, you get the big guns, the stars, the celebrities – but Trump is doing the grunt work. He's kind of on the ground in these swing states with blue collar voters that end up, the working class voters moving towards the Republicans, and especially like black men and Hispanic working class voters moving in the Republican direction enough to offset any Democratic momentum elsewhere.
So, Josh, just to sum up, I'm a little late, but I get the sense that you think he's winning, but he hasn't won.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, there's still 2 weeks left until Election Day, and I think he's got the momentum. He's got the momentum. I think Republicans and Democrats alike are looking at polling in those swing states slightly moving in the GOP direction, but this is too close for comfort, and it's still anyone's game.
Josh, always fascinating, and this is a fascinating time to do your job because an analyst on something that is such a unicorn election in so many ways. Josh Krasshour, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment with your calls. This is the Brian. And we'll find out if there's more to know. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
According to nutritionists, the healthiest Halloween candy is peanut M&M's. With the tiny exception of kids that die from touching them.
Right, that's pretty good. So that was a part of Weekend Update. It's the only Saturday Night Live I haven't seen in a long time. and it seems to have a lot of funny stuff in it.
I mean, the weekend update, I mean, it's usually, what, like 12, 15 minutes? And we grab, you know, the funny ones, and sometimes they're newsy, and sometimes they're just...
The biggest mistake these people make... I got to do this. I'm going to get off. I got to find out this morning. I'll tell you about it later. Mine.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Dodgers against Yankees, World Series game number one. You want to buy a ticket, have about $1,000. It's the cheapest seat. A company that specializes in last-minute tickets said you could expect to spend about $1,049. Game two, about $1,896. So make sure you really like the teams. Next, LeBron and Bronny James expected to play together in the Lakers season opener. Father and son combo will very likely be on the court together. He was the number one draft pick, as you know. First time since father-son. Reminds me of Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. The big difference was Jr. was considered the best player in baseball. At 19, one of the best. His dad was on the back end. This is different. His dad is the best grade player ever on the back end. And his son, a lot of people don't think is ready.
He's like the Nepo baby.
No question. Yeah. I believe he's a great kid, but he should have stayed in school. Mark my words. Or he should go down to the G League and just get better.
Maybe he will after the game tonight.
Maybe.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.